actually start sharing my screen now because we're going to steer this discussion, which is really, really good, but just steer it a little towards more Capra. As a Capra community, as we have seen from Leanne's talk, does suffer from very severe lack of diversity. So I'm just going to share just a few pointers that have come up. Hopefully everybody can see this. So the first thing we just wanted to bring up to everybody is like, please do the Capra survey that has been sent out. It is for demographics, but also as Dr. Imogen actually said, we also have asked, if you didn't give a talk, is there a reason why? To try capture some of that information, if there's any, like if people maybe just don't feel comfortable for some reason. We also want to open up the idea of liaison with the LISA EDI team, because Cellforce is so well connected with LISA. Should we maybe have a person from the Capra community on that team that can kind of go between the two? Also, we just want to open up to the community. Like, are there things that people feel that they're facing when they're trying to encourage diverse applicants? Is it an issue of time, lack of resource, other? And again, I think this is something that has come up. Should institutions introduce an EDI statement for applications or source out champions about diversity? I personally really like this point because I feel, being a European based in North America, I have noticed that these EDI statements seem to be becoming a more and more thing, with the idea being, yes, if you have two excellent candidates and one's diverse, you want to champion diversity. But if you have two excellent candidates from a non-diversity, say you have two white males, but one of them has done all this work to try and encourage and take some of that burden away from the diverse community in championing us, maybe let's hire that person. So like incentivizing, as Imogen just pointed out, incentivizing the idea that when people do work in this area, that there is a reward at the end. In particular, the two points there we just want to make, I don't know if anybody saw it, Perimeter made this institute-wide, the Picture a Scientist movie. And one of the heartfelt things at the end was these MIT professors, females, all grouped together. And like in the dark of night, were going in and measuring the size of the labs to prove that their labs were smaller than the male labs. Because when they said it, people didn't believe them. So they came back with like those numbers to say, the numbers don't lie. But at the end of it, it was quite sad because she had these binders and binders of all this information they gathered. And she was like, I just wanted to do research. I didn't want to do this. I just wanted to research DNA. So the idea is let's share the weight. And then just also when we were collecting stories from women in physics and Perimeter for the International Women's Day, a current team that we didn't look for this. We just asked all the women in Perimeter, hey, tell us your story. And the amount of stories, we noticed nearly every single one of us mentioned, oh, I met a person who championed me, or who, you know, there was somebody who was like pushing me along the way, like going, no, you can do this. So, you know, is that a survival bias that all of us had come across somebody on our way that champions diversity? Also, maximizing support from your institute was really nice for me. When I started asking these questions in Perimeter, I was getting floods of emails back from various people in Perimeter going, yes, let's do this. Let's really address this. Any comments on the code of conduct and just general ideas from the floor. So without trying to hoard too much time, I'll just open that up to see if there's any comments. Lee, I still see your hand up. Yes, sorry. Sorry, I have too many things open now. See if I can ask you to unmute.
Here okay. We are.
Lee?
I'm about to take the risk of making myself unpopular. With respect to EDI statements, there really are smart physicists who are uneducated or undereducated who believe that the EDI statements are political and believe that having them in a job application is just as political and just as corrosive as when in Eastern European and Soviet countries, there were political statements to test for the ability to get a job. And I don't share this feeling, but I know people genuinely share this feeling. And do we really want there to be a cohort of people who feel that they were excluded from the best academic situations because of the political issue. And I say that with a lot of sadness, but I really don't want to work in an institution in which somebody who had a different political opinion from me was excluded because of standing up for their political opinion and not wanting to write an EDI statement.
Yeah, no, it's a negative backlash, right? Sometimes that happens.
I think you should think it through very carefully, because there are people for whom that looks like fascism or the ex-Soviet Union governance. Okay, that's, apart from that, I'm 100% behind you.
Imogen, did you want to take up any comment on that?
Sorry, I was just typing a response, actually. Yeah, that's a great point. I think what I was going to say is the diversity statements in the US, which have been around for quite a long time, are really quite different, I think, from the way EDI statements are being developed in Canada, which is more about what are you going to do, what have you done to create an inclusive environment? What are you going to do in the future? So I think it's much more actionable and it's active. And it's actually reflective of what the funding councils now are expecting people to say in their grants. So I would say, and I mean, lots of places do this now, I would say if you can't write an effective EDI statement, then you're going to struggle a bit to get a grant because that's required in your insert discovery grant, you know, HQP section. But they are based on your previous evidence of previous activity, what you're going to do going forward. And they may well be informed by your lived experience as a member of a marginalized community, but they're also expected to demonstrate a self-awareness, a level of engagement in collegiality, a level of engagement in creating cultures of care. So they're more action-oriented, I would say, as opposed to political. And so I advise people against looking at US diversity statements. Don't use those as models. Don't take boilerplate language or anything. Look at what U of T, what other institutions are doing in terms of what they're asking for.
Thank you, Imogen. Aaron Zimmerman, you have your hand up. I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Yes. One thing that I think was made even more clear during the discussion following Imogen's talk is how much having a virtual component to this conference can make it accessible to groups who previously maybe weren't coming to CAPRA for an entire variety of reasons. Obviously, the most obvious one is if you're financially unable to come, or if you're entering the field for the first time and you just kind of want to get a sense of things. So something maybe we can look into is trying to ensure that something about CAPRA is still digitally accessible as we move towards, I think, the experience we all love, which is to get together in person and to talk.
Cool. Thank you, Aaron. Any other comments on what Aaron said? Okay. But yeah, we actually also saw that really in the numbers when we looked at last year's CAPRA. All of a sudden, not only did you have this huge jump, but you had a lot more women attend. Michael, I'm going to ask you to unmute. You have your hand up.
So, yeah, maybe like, I guess a response to Lee. Yeah, you might have some people who are uncomfortable politically with it. But at the same time, you already have people who are uncomfortable, the people who are facing the issues that these statements are meant to tackle in the first place. And on the other side, you also had a lot of people who in the 60s were uncomfortable with the civil rights union or movement. You had people who, when gay marriage was legalized, you had people who were uncomfortable with that on a quote unquote entirely political basis. So it is somebody being politically uncomfortable with something equivalent to somebody being uncomfortable with it because it affects real issues in their life.
Very nice point, Michael. Does anybody want to, I can unmute Lee if you wanted to reply, or Imogen, if you had anything to say on that. I guess the whole point is it's always going to be an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah, and the Academy is a place for dialogue. And I think we need to be working towards positive dialogue. We've kind of lost a little bit of that, I think. So, yeah.
Lee?
Boy, it's the question is, how do we build a diverse community? And how do we build a diverse community includes, as you always emphasize, recognizing the reasons of people's history and people's past and families, why they are who they are. And there really are people who come from, who, as I described, who we want to win over. And do we win them over by giving them a reason to think that they were excluded because of their political views? And I understand what the last two people said, but I think tactically you're making a mistake. And again, I am way on your side 99% of the time, and 99% of the time when it comes to concrete issues of actions and decisions. But this worries me. I don't want to have a large group of talented physicists who think they were excluded because they have right-wing political views.
No, I can understand that. We're already going over, so we're just going to do two last comments from Sam and Gazelle. So Sam, I think you had your hand up first, so I'm going to ask you to unmute.
Okay, yeah, so sort of on the bullet point on collaborating with the LISA EDI team. So I think that's very important, partially because one thing that would be very nice to establish is, in regards to underrepresentation, is CAPRA underrepresenting the IMRI community at large? Is the issue that there are people doing work that are not being represented, which is true probably on all of these things that I'm going to say, or is it more the IMRI community is not properly, you know, bringing in a large, you know, variation in people, or is it the gravitational community at large that is doing this, right? And so, of course, all of these things are true, but like, which one has the largest effect? And, you know, how do we solve each of those different places where we could lose people? I think is something that would be very helpful. So if we know that the demographics within CAPRA versus the IMRI community versus LISA, we can start to see where are people getting, you know, where are we losing them out from, you know, is it getting to CAPRA, coming into the IMRI community? Where is it happening?
Yeah. And I guess seeing all those people doing physics PhDs, why aren't they doing their physics PhDs in IMRIs or CAPRA? So yeah, I and we're open to volunteers from in particular CAPRA community to maybe join the LISA EDI committee and let's liaise with them to get those numbers. Because at the moment, what we could only find online was general physics. Does anyone else have any comments on that? I'm going to ask Gazelle to unmute.
Okay, just a response, a comment on Lee's point. I think I completely agree. I think asking people to make a statement, honestly, I think it doesn't do any help. Like, I've heard too many superficial statements and they don't mean anything. They don't lead to anywhere. And people are very good. Talk is cheap, making lip service. But on the question of whether we should be excluding people based on their EDI record, I think the way I would look at it is, should we excluding people who are dismissive of the rest of the community and they promote exclusivity and promote toxicity in the community, in academic community, rather than excluding somebody based on their idea? And I think it's very easy to look at the record of people. They don't need to make a statement. You should be able to just take a look at their records and say, and the onus should be on the people who are doing hiring and giving grants, because I also don't think necessarily articulating how good you are at EDI by itself is a good thing. It could buy us again, towards people who are very good at articulation, have good training, good resources, have writers who write for them, and not native speakers, and so on. So, so anyway, that's my comment.
Thank you. Imogen, do you have anything to say back to that or any other comments?
I think it's an ongoing discussion. I think Gazelle raises a very good point there, which is that if you're going to include something, you know, as part of an evaluation, you have to make sure that who is doing the evaluation is really deeply skilled and aware. And so we spend a lot of time on ensuring that people understand what is meant by, you know, what a very good EDI statement looks like and what a inadequate one looks like. And so if you're going to do it, you have to make sure everybody is upskilled in terms of being able to evaluate it. But the upskilling of the community is part of the process, right? So it takes a long time. So one thing when you're talking about diversity initiatives, I just want to be, you know, sort of, I want you to be cautious about, which is the demographics is one piece, right? So what people look like and who you've got there and the numbers is one piece. The participation, inclusive participation, is another piece, right? Which is, yes, now they're there, but are they in the decision-making roles? Are they actually engaged in stuff? And the third piece is that everybody must be upskilled. Like it's going to take a long time in a discipline like physics to shift the numbers, right? But that's not to say that you can't shift the level of skill in the population rapidly, so that your community by next year almost all have the skill set around what does it mean to create inclusive cultures that attract and retain the most diverse talent. And that's everybody. That's a short, fast win, but it requires everybody to do the work. And, you know, the different evaluation on how you get there can be, we can discuss that, but don't get completely tied up in the demographics. That's the long game. That's the hard, long slog. You can do very good work in a short term as well.
Thank you. Yeah, and I feel we've gone extremely over right now, although I've just noticed that Leo Stein has piped in with some demographics for DGRAPH, which is the gravitational group of APS, the American Physical Society, saying that they have 15% women, 0.5% non-binary among students. I'm sorry, and among students, 22% and 1%. So they are seeing the numbers increase in the younger generation, but I guess there is this whole leaky pipe thing that maybe let's try keep those numbers continuing true. But unfortunately, we've gone way over time and we have a discussion session on second order plans and we need people to have time to have a coffee and a lunch break. So we are gonna have to end it there. I really wanna thank everybody for their participation, in particular, Dr. Imogen Coe, who like took this time to share all that information with us and give us her take on our community in particular and how to make it a better place. So with that, I'll stop sharing my screen and thank everybody again. And I'll see you all after the break.